You are listening to an ADIS podcast.
Hello, and welcome to our podcast discussion on the current and emerging treatment strategies for patients with metastatic EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer, NSCLC, whose disease has progressed after treatment with osimertinib and platinum-based chemotherapy. This podcast and its transcript will be published in Advances in Therapy. My name is Sandeep Patel, and I'm a medical oncologist from the University of California, San Diego. My colleague, Dr. Jyoti Patel, joins me in this discussion.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jyoti Patel, and I'm a medical oncologist from Northwestern University in Chicago. Sandeep, I'm looking forward to this discussion.
As am I. Jyoti, we know that treatment for patients with metastatic EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer has rapidly evolved over the past decade, driven by advances in biomarker testing. Before delving into our main topic, can you briefly talk about the importance of molecular testing for patients with lung cancer?
Sure. EGFR alterations are pretty common in non-small cell lung cancer. They account for the mutations that we target in 20% of adenocarcinomas in Caucasian populations and up to 50% of adenocarcinomas in Asian populations. ESMO guidelines recommend genetic testing in patients with lung cancer for EGFR mutations. It's a level one recommendation. And it's clear that biomarker testing rates have increased over time. In fact, a real-world study indicated that up to 78% of patients with advanced non-small cell lung cancer in the United States were appropriately tested for EGFR mutations, although one can imagine that these rates would vary widely in other countries. We use both tissue and liquid biopsies together sometimes or sequentially for biomarker testing to really help the selection of appropriate treatments. I think more and more of us are using concurrent testing at point of care. And we've also shown over almost 20 years now that multiple drugs can work. Three generations of EGFR tyrosine kinase inhibitors have been developed to treat patients with EGFR mutated non-small cell lung cancer. However, when we say EGFR mutated lung cancer, we know that there's differential sensitivity to EGFR TKIs. The most common sensitizing mutations are exon 19 deletions and the exon 21 L858R point mutation, which are considered targetable mutations. I think this is really important to stress, so it's no longer adequate to say someone has an EGFR mutation. You really want to give some flavor to it because, we understand there's likely differential sensitivity. Less common mutations, such as exon 20 insertions, previously were felt to be non-targetable, but now there's some newer agents that have been approved in the second-line setting in the United States, such as mobocertinib and amivantamab. ESMO recommends testing that would cover EGFR exons 18 to 21 overall, as well as the resistance mutation T790M in exon 20 in patients who received first or second generation EGFR TKIs. Is there anything you'd like to add, Sandeep?
No, I think that's a great summary on molecular testing. As I like to say in clinic, you nicely pointed out, it's not enough to just give the street name. We have to give the full address now for EGFR, right? And so whether it's EGFR mutation, exon 19, an atypical mutation, an exon 20 insertion, I think your point that we have to be very specific about that is key. And so let's move on to discuss about the treatments that derive from making the proper molecular diagnosis. Osimertinib is the main EGFR TKI that's being prescribed in the United States to patients with advanced non-small cell lung cancer harboring canonical EGFR sensitizing mutations. This is typically utilized in the frontline space in the United States. Osimertinib, a third generation EGFR TKI, it's a pill with activity against T790M mutation, and it's significantly improved clinical outcomes compared with first generation EGFR TKIs in patients with previously untreated EGFR mutated non-small cell lung cancer. This was demonstrated in the phase 3 FLORA trial, which compared osimertinib with a comparator EGFR TKI, such as gefitinib or erlotinib, in the frontline setting. And to me, one of the things I was really impressed about this trial is this isn't a comparison to chemotherapy. It's a comparison to state-of-the-art targeted therapies, even a couple of years prior to the initiation of this study. In this study, treatment with osimertinib resulted in a significantly long median progression-free survival of 18.9 months versus 10 months in the comparator group, which here was first-generation EGFR TKIs such as gefitinib or erlotinib. And the median overall survival was 38.6 months in the osimertinib group versus 31.8 months in the comparator group. And so osimertinib is recommended as the preferred frontline EGFR TKI in the US and Europe because of its superior survival benefit and favorable safety profile. Oncology Society in Asia also recommend osimertinib as a first-line therapy for these patients in parallel with other first and second generation EGFR TKIs. But for me, I think the efficacy profile, especially the CNS efficacy, is what really makes me continue to utilize this drug in the frontline space, along with its very tolerable toxicity profile, which actually makes osimertinib amenable even in the adjuvant setting. Jyothi, can you comment on resistance mechanisms following treatment of osimertinib and what your strategy in these patients is?
Sure. Thanks so much, Sandeep. So patients who are found to have EGFR classical mutations receive osimertinib, and the responses are swift and dramatic, and patients feel much better. But as you point out, we know that the median progression-free survival is just around 19 months. So unfortunately, disease progression on osimertinib inevitably occurs. And this can happen because of EGFR-dependent or EGFR-independent mechanisms of resistance. So the C797X, which is mainly C797S mutations, are probably the most common EGFR-dependent mechanisms of resistance to osimertinib. And we see this in about 29% of patients. So this is a mutation within the EGFR gene, which changes binding to osimertinib. And then we also know that there are a host of EGFR independent mechanisms. So that can include histologic transformation, for example, to small cell lung cancer. And these can be pretty common. When patients develop small cell transformation, and again, this is something you can only find by doing a biopsy at resistance, we generally tend to use platinum etoposide regimens. And unfortunately, even for these patients, although they'll have a response, generally these tend to be short, and often we'll see progression in the CNS. These two sort of buckets of EGFR-dependent mutations and then EGFR-independent mutations happen, but in over half of patients who are receiving osimertinib in the first or second line setting, we don't really understand what the mechanism of resistance is, and we call this an unidentified resistance. When patients progress, I think it's important to see sort of the cadence of progression as well as the pattern of progression. So sometimes local treatment can be really helpful for patients who've had oligo progression. And that might be that they're treated with surgery or radiation for limited sites of progressive disease and often will continue targeted systemic therapy. For some patients who have more systemic progression, the combination of platinum-based chemotherapy plus bevacizumab and atezolizumab is recommended. And that is, you know, the use of this regimen, I think, varies by region around the world.
No, absolutely. And the point that with that regimen, it's a paclitaxel backbone, though there are studies looking at pemetrexed. But it also, if one wanted to go back to osimertinib or continue osimertinib, the fact that there's an immunotherapy, atezolizumab there, predisposes towards pneumonitis is there are a couple thoughts around why there's variable utilization of that regimen. But it's a really a great summary on how we think about how we treat these patients. And so, Jyothi, what is your agent of choice when patients develop resistance to osimertinib and there are no targetable mutations or no evidence of small cell histologic transformation has been identified? Unfortunately, an all too common problem in our clinic.
You're absolutely right. So generally for these patients in whom I don't find another targetable mutation, I tend to reflex back to platinum-based chemotherapy. And I really think this is the mainstay of treatment following progression on one of the tyrosine kinase inhibitors. Typical combinations include pemetrexed plus carboplatin with or without bevacizumab, as well as we alluded to a minute ago with carboplatin, paclitaxel plus bevacizumab. And primarily the paclitaxel is used in patients who may have renal insufficiency or in whom we want to integrate immunotherapy at some point. We often will continue osimertinib if a patient has a history of brain metastasis. And so again, generally that's better tolerated with carboplatin and pemetrexed. I will often add that in maybe the second cycle of therapy, and now I'm becoming more comfortable with even adding it or continuing it from cycle one. Unfortunately, although we all feel comfortable with these regimens, we know that second-line chemotherapy is not as effective as we'd like it to be. And again, the clinical benefit from these platinum-based chemotherapies, even with maintenance pemetrexed, tends to be shorter than one would hope. In fact, in a real-world study, platinum-based chemotherapy resulted in a median progression-free survival of 4.7 months in patients with non-small cell lung cancer whose disease had progressed on EGFR TKIs. And this is really difficult, right? Patients had started on osimertinib with great anticipation and hope. We've been thinking about progression-free survivals that look like 19 months, and then certainly to your next regimen with a PFS of less than 5 months is certainly disheartening. In this review of real-world data in patients who received pemetrexed, maybe they fared slightly better with a median PFS of 5.1 months.
Absolutely. Great points. What is your opinion on immunotherapy, which is actively being evaluated both as monotherapy and in combination with chemotherapy, in these patients after osimertinib stops working for them?
Immune checkpoint inhibitors have lacked considerable impact in patients with EGFR mutated non-small cell lung cancer. And we know that particularly monotherapy lends minimal clinical benefit for these patients. There are several immunotherapy plus chemotherapy combinations that have been explored and reported recently. So the IMpower150 trial, which we were talking about before, is adding atezolizumab plus bevacizumab to carboplatin paclitaxel. And this was, I think, initially recommended as a treatment option for patients with disease progression on EGFR TKIs in Europe. And this is based on subgroup analysis of IMpower150. However, there have been a number of recent trials that really make us reconsider and figure out how to move forward. Recent results from phase III trials, such as CheckMate 722 and KEYNOTE 789, indicate that combinations of immunotherapies with chemotherapy that's platinum-based don't do as well following EGFR TKIs. So CheckMate 722 compared chemotherapy alone to chemotherapy with nivolumab. And the primary endpoint in this study wasn't met. In fact, the median PFS was 5.6 months in the nivolumab plus chemotherapy arm versus 5.4 months in the chemotherapy alone arm. Response rates were 31% and 27%, respectively. Moreover, the nivolumab arm was associated with a higher incidence of grade 3 or 4 treatment-related hematologic effects, with anemia and decreased white blood counts being the most common. More recently, KEYNOTE 789 also did not meet its dual primary endpoint of PFS and overall survival. So this was looking at pembrolizumab plus carboplatin, platinum-based chemotherapy. The PFS in the pembrolizumab arm was 5.6 months versus 5.5 months with chemotherapy alone. And median OS was 15.9 months in the pembrolizumab arm versus 14.7 in the chemotherapy arm alone. There was a slight trend towards an improved OS with pembrolizumab, but this was not statistically significant. And I think as a community, we felt that this was a negative trial. So these two trials were just immune checkpoint inhibitors in combination with chemotherapy. ORIENT-31 is an ongoing phase III trial in China, and it evaluated combinations of sintilimab, which is an anti-PD-1 agent, with or without a bevacizumab biosimilar, IBI305, plus platinum-based chemotherapy in patients who'd had progression following an EGFR TKI. In the interim analysis, combinations of sintilimab plus chemotherapy with or without IBI305 were associated with statistically significant improvements in PFS compared with chemotherapy alone. And in fact, the median PFS was 7.2 months with all four drugs versus 5.5 months in the sintilimab plus chemotherapy group and 4.3 months in the chemotherapy alone group. Incidences of grade 3 or higher treatment emergent adverse events ranged from 46% to 60% across different groups. Sandeep, can you comment on treatments available for patients who've progressed on both osimertinib and platinum-based chemotherapy?
Yeah, that's a great question. There is no single established standard of care for these patients. Clinical trials are really an opportunity for us to advance care, not only for these patients, but others as well. Salvage therapies have been used in the third line, including docetaxel combinations. Although there have been little improvement in outcomes based on the REVEL study, which looked at docetaxel plus ramucirumab, which had a median overall survival benefit of about 10.5 months compared to 9.1 months. With docetaxel alone and a median PFS of 4.5 months with the doci-ram combination versus doci alone at 3 months. Investigator assessed objective response rate with ram doci was 23% versus 14% with doci. And docetaxel in and of itself has significant toxicities for our patients. And in a combination with ramucirumab, there's a higher rate of grade 3 treatment emergent adverse events, 79% versus 71% for docetaxel alone. Another combination that's often utilized is bevacizumab plus paclitaxel, which showed improved objective response rates compared with docetaxel in a phase 3 trial. However, the median overall survival was not significantly prolonged with this combination. And I think many of our patients in the third line space start to have decreasing performance status. And we often in the real world setting are forced to use weekly versions of docetaxel and paclitaxel regimens to maximize tolerability. However, clinically meaningful improvements in survival have not yet been seen in patients over these years. And I do think that clinical trials, especially for some of the antibody drug conjugates, are some of the more attractive options for these patients, as well as biomarker-directed therapies towards acquired resistance, if available. Jyoti, at AACR 2023, you presented a nice analysis of real-world treatment patterns in patients with EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer after progression on osimertinib and platinum-based chemotherapy in the United States. Can you walk us through your results?
Sure. Thanks so much, Sandeep. So, you know, real-world analysis really present us with an opportunity to generalize our findings. Remember that often on clinical trials, eligibility criteria can be very restrictive. You know, it's definitely a little bit different population than many of us encounter in clinic. So these kind of analyses, I think, can be sobering for many of us and give us insights that we can't get just from clinical trials. So we used Flatiron Health electronic health record derived data, and our results showed that treatment patterns were highly variable. Patients received non-platinum based chemotherapies, immunotherapies, TKI monotherapy, TKI combinations, or platinum-based chemotherapy. And as Sandeep mentioned, really, you know, it is in many ways sort of dealer's choice, and that was very much borne out in the data that we saw. Regardless of these interventions, we can say that overall survival was poor, with a median progression-free survival of only 3.3 months and a median OS of 8.6 months. Similar results were seen in another real-world study in patients with non-small cell lung cancer harboring targetable mutations, including EGFR mutations, whose disease had progressed on standard of care regimens. The median OS was 10.3 months, and the median PFS was 3.2 months. Overall, I think these real-world data indicate that we have a lot to do. The treatment landscape after osimertinib and platinum-based chemotherapy is unfortunately highly fragmented and subpar, and really, I think, highlights the need for new and more effective treatments for patients with advanced EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer.
Absolutely. Outcomes are indeed limited for this patient population. And another challenge faced by physicians is the treatment of brain metastasis, which is unfortunately all too common in patients with non-small cell lung cancer with EGFR mutations. And although osimertinib has shown intracranial efficacy, management of brain metastasis on progression of osimertinib remains a serious concern, and integration of stereotactic radiotherapy approaches may not be sufficient for all patients. Additional agents with proven intracranial activity are needed as subsequent therapies beyond osimertinib to help maximize the benefit not only viscerally outside the brain, but most importantly, in addition, in the CNS, where these types of cancers in particular have a propensity to grow.
Sandeep, I absolutely agree that these patients are in need of agents that can be effective systemically as well as in the CNS. And we know that we need to have therapies that are also well tolerated. So we talked a little bit about the role of biopsy for patients at progression, but certainly I think this next section really highlights why it's so important. So when a patient progresses in our clinic, we will do liquid biopsy as well as tissue biopsy when safe and feasible. And the tissue again helps us with histologic transformation. The blood and tissue NGS help us find other avenues to target. And one such area in which I think we've seen efficacy of dual targeting is in MET amplifications. So we know that MET amplifications are the most common EGFR independent mechanism of resistance to osimertinib. In fact, we'll see this in up to 30% of cases. There is wide, I think, discussion about what accounts for being MET positive, what degree of MET activation do you know? But we can say very clearly that there are agents that can target MET. Sandeep, what are your thoughts on agents targeting MET?
Absolutely. Great point. I think an excellent point that we need to be able to do the right test for our right patient to get them on the right treatment. And so in regards to MET, amivantamab is a bispecific MET and EGFR-directed antibody with particular activity against EGFR exon 20 insertion. So at the point that we have to name both the street and the address for the mutations. Amivantamab also is active against exon 19 deletions, the L858R point mutation, which is an exon 21, T790M, and other exon 20 insertions. And this has been assessed in combination with lazertinib, which is a CNS-penetrant third-generation EGFR TKI in the CHRYSALIS-2 study. In that study, preliminary objective response rate by blinded independent central review was 36% in patients with EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer that had progressed on osimertinib and platinum-based chemotherapy. And of particular interest, the combination of amivantamab plus lazertinib showed some evidence of CNS activity in that study. The most common toxicities seen were infusion-related events, which very much relates to the unique nature of amivantamab and its own infusion schedule to mitigate that, as well as acneiform dermatitis. Soon, data will be available from the MARIPOSA-2 study, which is a phase 3 study investigating lazertinib in combination with amivantamab plus platinum-based chemotherapy versus chemotherapy alone as a second or third line treatment in patients with EGFR-mutated advanced non-small cell lung cancer that has progressed on or after osimertinib. Additional MET inhibitors can be small molecules. Amivantamab is a bispecific antibody. An example of a small molecule MET inhibitor is savolitinib, which plus osimertinib showed encouraging activity in the phase 1 TATTON study in patients with MET upregulated EGFR-mutated advanced non-small cell lung cancer after progression on osimertinib. And about 42% of those patients had previously received platinum-based chemotherapy as well. In this study of savolitinib plus osimertinib, the objective response rate was 33%, and the median progression-free survival was 5.5 months. And the incidence of grade 3 or higher treatment-related adverse events was 57%. Another small molecule inhibitor of MET is tepotinib, and preliminary activity was observed with tepotinib plus osimertinib in patients with EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer harboring MET amplifications after progression on frontline osimertinib in the INSIGHT-2 study.
Other than MET inhibitors and other targetable oncogenic drivers, what are we doing with therapies targeting EGFR-dependent resistance? And how are we really approaching broader coverage for these patients?
That's a great question, Jyoti. As a substantial proportion of our patients who develop resistance to osimertinib, many of the mechanisms remain unclear. In addition, many of these patients have mutations in their tumors that are currently not targetable with our currently available treatments, and clinical trials are investigating novel therapeutic approaches for these patients. One example of a novel therapeutic target for these patients include agents targeting HER3, which may provide benefit to a broader patient population because HER3 is often commonly expressed in EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer and has been implicated in therapeutic resistance to EGFR TKIs. One example of a HER3 antibody drug conjugate is patritumumab deruxtecan, which in a phase 1 trial was associated with an objective response rate of 39% and a median progression-free survival of over 8 months in patients with EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer who had previous treatment with EGFR TKI and platinum-based chemotherapy. Of note, clinical activity was observed across a broad range of HER3 membranous expression levels, meaning HER3-IHC did not predict which patients benefited from this therapeutic strategy with patritumab deruxtecan, as well as across diverse mechanisms of resistance after progression on EGFR small molecule inhibitor therapy. Grade 3 or higher treatment emergent adverse events occurred in almost two-thirds of patients, with the most common being thrombocytopenia. HER3-DXd is currently investigated in the phase 2 HERTHENA-Lung01 trial as a third line or later option in advanced EGFR mutated non-small cell lung cancer who had previously received treatment with one or more EGFR TKIs and platinum-based chemotherapy. Jyothi, can you comment on some of the other next-generation EGFR TKIs currently under development?
Sure. This is certainly an exciting field because there are a number of next-generation EGFR TKIs that are in development to overcome this kind of resistance. While there's some candidates demonstrating encouraging anti-tumor activity, data are primarily preclinical or very early in clinical trials. BLU-945 is one such drug that's active against T790M as well as C797S resistance mutations. Problem is that there might be less activity against exon 19 deletions. The phase 1-2 trial called the Symphony trial showed that BLU-945 showed some anti-tumor activity in patients who had previously treated lung cancer that had received at least one EGFR TKI. Another such drug, BBT-176, demonstrated preclinical activity against non-small cell lung cancers that were resistant to EGFR TKIs. Another class of next generation EGFR TKIs employs an allosteric binding mechanism to bypass mutations conferring resistance to osimertinib, such as C797S and L718Q. JBJ-090632, an allosteric EGFR TKI, is being investigated as a potential option to overcome acquired resistance to existing EGFR tyrosine kinase inhibitors.
Thank you, Jyothi. These are indeed promising therapeutic candidates for treatments after osimertinib and platinum-based chemotherapy. To best make informed treatment decisions, molecular testing really seems to be of paramount importance to assess tumor evolution over time, as well as a diagnosis to ensure patients get on appropriate therapy to begin with. Therefore, routine next-generation sequencing is indicated for patients with non-small cell lung cancer, and tissue may be indicated in particular if there are concerns around small cell transformation, and liquid biopsies are generally more available given that they can be done by blood draw as well. And these can be complementary in forming the best management of patients with EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer. One hurdle we often have in clinic is that there's an insufficient availability of biopsy material, especially on progression. As patients often progress through their treatment cycle, they're often less keen to have biopsies due to how they're feeling. However, in the setting of small cell transformation, as Jyothi mentioned, it's key to have that information as it affects our ability to optimally treat these patients. Also, agents with broader coverage, as discussed, HER3-DXd, may be preferred in the setting in which there's unavailable molecular information. However, the ability to use liquid biopsies to try and inform patients, at least for genomic resistance targets, may be an opportunity for some patients. And finally, treatment tolerability and impact on quality of life are critical as we're selecting further lines of treatment in the advanced setting. Jyothi, what are your thoughts on how do we individualize and optimize therapeutic treatment decision-making for our patients?
Certainly, diverse treatment strategies are really necessary for the best chance of success in these patients. So we talked a little bit about cadence of progression as well as pattern of progression, systemic versus oligoprogressive disease. Unfortunately, we can say that all patients, despite initial response to EGFR TKIs, will have disease progression after osimertinib, and that platinum-based chemotherapy, although it improves outcomes, is still substandard. We are all looking for more new and effective and safe treatment options for this disease. I think factors that we've alluded to really include efficacy as well as CNS activity as well as tolerability for our patients. Hopefully, we'll be seeing some new and effective treatment options for our patients based on readout from some key phase two and three trials that we should be seeing in the near future. And hopefully this will guide us with some insights into future therapies for these patients and really optimizing their treatment journeys.
Absolutely. And thank you, Jyothi. This is a great conversation, and I hope those listening have found our podcast useful.
Thanks so much, Sandeep.
You are listening to an ADIS podcast. You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Podcast with your preferred podcast provider or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements, please read the article on the journal website.